You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. According to new research, frugality can be really expensive. For example, buying in bulk can save you money in the long term. But for people with lower incomes, buying in bulk may be out of the question.
In a new study, our next guest tried to see how big an impact that has on household budgets for low-income families. Joining us now is Mike Palazzolo. He's a marketing professor at the University of California, Davis. He's the co-author of a study that looks at this issue. It's called Frugality is Hard to Afford. Mike, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start. I know the research is looking at bigger picture stuff, but let's talk about what you found out when you looked at frugality and toilet paper in particular. What kind of things did you find?
So we were looking primarily at how lack of liquidity might impede low-income households from being able to engage in intertemporal substitution to save money. And what I mean by that is, if you think about when you go to the supermarket and you see, say, something on sale, you may not need it right now, but if it's cheaper than it would be a week from now when you would need it, for many of us it's very trivial to just go ahead and make that purchase at this moment, or alternatively to buy a 36-pack of toilet paper at Costco. But for low-income households, because they don't have an infinite supply of cash to just throw around, they have to make much more difficult choices about where they spend it and are prohibited sometimes, or at least inhibited, from engaging in these behaviors. And we look specifically at the toilet paper category and show that this is the case.
Right. I think anybody who pays attention when they're shopping knows the larger the pack of toilet paper you get, the cheaper it is per unit. So if somebody can only afford that one roll or four pack at a time, over the course of a year, they're going to be paying a lot more than someone who can buy it, as you say, in bulk at Costco or the grocery store.
Indeed. In fact, we checked, we compared their behavior, the behavior of the lowest income quintile in the U.S., to the highest income quintile, and based on their toilet paper purchase habits, we found that we would expect that the lowest income households would pay about 5.9% more per sheet of toilet paper due to their inability to buy in bulk and buy on sale as often as higher income households.
And it's not just that liquidity issue you mentioned of how much money do you have in your wallet right now. You also raise issues of transportation. If you have to take the bus to the grocery store, can you buy that big pack?
Indeed, yes. So there's transportation. There are storage constraints. So often, naturally, lower-income households are more likely renting or may live in a smaller house where there's less storage space. So there are a number of other factors. Not all of it is covered in our research, but other researchers have found strong effects in particular of storage constraints. We find that even after controlling for all of these other things to the best of our ability, there's still an effect of liquidity constraints above and beyond it. So that 5.9% number I mentioned before, how much more low-income households are paying for toilet paper, that's actually probably a lower bound because that's even after controlling for these other factors.
We've been talking about toilet paper, and that adds up, as you say, over the course of the year. What happens when we start saying toilet paper and cans of soup and cans of green beans or whatever, all the other products that exactly the same rule is going to apply to?
Well, so that's actually a much trickier question to answer, and it's one reason why we tried to stick with one category, specifically one category that isn't food-based. So there's some other research that indicates that households, regardless of income level, if they have more of something on hand, they are more likely to consume it faster. So if you imagine you're having dinner and you have a 24-pack of Coke sitting in your pantry as opposed to a 6-pack, you might say, oh, well, I could have a Coke tonight. I have a bunch sitting there. I might as well just drink it. And so perhaps one next step for our field to take is to start looking across a bunch of different categories and start trying to develop some theories as to what solutions might work here that wouldn't have detrimental consequences. So you can imagine, we've suggested that some of these problems we've highlighted are due to liquidity constraints, among other things. If we were to relax liquidity constraints, provide low-income households with the ability to borrow a little more easily, it could very well help them save money in categories like toilet paper, but it could potentially lead to health consequences if they're consuming more soda.
We're talking to Mike Palazzolo, marketing professor at the University of California, Davis, looking at the sometimes high cost of being frugal. Well, let's talk about that idea. It is, ironically, I guess, more expensive to live in this country if you're low income, if you're in poverty.
Indeed, and for many reasons. One we haven't talked about so much just yet, but that is alluded to briefly in our paper and studied by others, is this concept of redlining. where some stores aren't available within low-income households. And above and beyond that, some research has found that actually even when stores are available in low-income neighborhoods, stores like Walmart or perhaps I shouldn't use exact names because it's not store-specific, but they may face higher prices within their low-income neighborhoods.
Do we know why that is?
So there's some conflict within the research about whether the effects found with respect to this are due to maybe because it's harder to get product there because some of these neighborhoods may be a little more isolated. There are fewer stores. It may be due to a lack of competition because there are fewer stores competing for these consumers in that location. It may be, you know, higher retail costs for renting a location if we're talking about big cities. That area of research isn't one I'm an expert in, but there are a number of different reasons that are being considered for why this might be the case.
A lot of times I think we see financial advice targeted at poor people and almost like chastising them for not being frugal enough, for not being careful with their money. It sounds like from what you're saying, from your own research and some of the other things you've cited, that even if you're poor and you want to be frugal, there are a lot of built-in obstacles.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what you've just touched on is, I think, one of the big areas of interest within the social sciences. There's a lot of disagreement about the degree to which low-income households may be just prohibited from doing the smart thing, and the degree to which perhaps their circumstances have made it very difficult for them to actually do the smart thing, even if they are able to do so. And so we found, as you mentioned, at least some evidence that they know the right thing to do, at least within some circumstances, but are limited from their ability to do it due to liquidity constraints.
Well, let's get back to solutions. You were starting to talk about that a little, and you mentioned the idea of easier access to borrowing to make it possible to, say, stock up on that item and save money. When we think of lending and borrowing in low-income neighborhoods, though, we're often talking about very high-interest, payday loans, car title loans, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What would you like to see available as an alternative?
So I'm going to sort of take a step back here and say I don't know that I want to claim right now that I see a clear alternative, simply because for the reasons I mentioned before, where we've seen some research indicating that buying in bulk can potentially lead to greater consumption, I don't know that the research has come to a strong conclusion on this, and I don't want to make a claim that isn't backed up by evidence. But I can say that the evidence does seem to indicate that the kind of loans available to these low-income households currently is insufficient, and we do need to find another solution. And that's probably a very important next step for us to start thinking about.
Now, how about to access to savings? Costco, there's an upfront cost. Low-income person may not be able to afford that. As you mentioned, they may have no stores that'll provide items in bulk, or maybe only one store, and there's no competition. Is there talk of anything we could do to, get rid of those bargain deserts, if I can make up a phrase?
It's interesting. Michelle Obama has pushed the concept of food deserts, which I think is what you're riffing on. And efforts to push greater access to healthier foods may, just as a consequence of having access in general via stores, help these sorts of problems as well. It's not what's been focused on in the press, but if access is increased to different types of stores, this may be helped just in the way that access to greater foods can be helped.
Apart from maybe borrowing being an option, maybe more access to stores, are there any other solution-oriented ideas that you're looking at, either in the paper we're talking about or in future research?
So I will say that I personally am not looking at this, but a lot of people are, and I think it's a really interesting topic that I may get into soon. But there's this idea that low-income households are harmed not just by liquidity constraints, not having enough cash on hand, but by income volatility, which at certain times of the year makes them extraordinarily constrained. You can imagine that at times where you're extraordinarily constrained as opposed to a little constrained, that relationship between what you're able to do and your purchasing power may not be exactly linear. And it can cause severe damage to low-income households' ability to save, ability to, say, get their car fixed and go on job interviews. So one solution that's been batted around is trying to find ways to simply decrease the volatility for low-income households, irrespective of their total annual earnings. And there are a number of ways that this can happen. Employers can try and just provide steadier hours for their workers, even if they're not changing the number of hours in total. There's been some talk, and I'm not an expert on government programs, but there's been some talk of trying to provide, insurance so that during lower earning times, low-income households can have a little bit of assistance. And so anything that can potentially help prevent low-income households from dipping down so low in terms of their liquidity that they're basically inhibited from doing anything can be very, very helpful.
So that volatility might be you work at a store, there's more hours available in the holiday season or something like that?
Exactly. Or even more extreme, you could be someone who has to bounce from job to job, and during the holiday season, it's easy to find work, and during the summer, maybe it's easy to find work, but around February, maybe it's very difficult. And so you have virtually no income in February and a lot more during the summer or around Christmas.
So what is your next step in researching these issues?
So my next step actually is under discussion right now with my co-author, Yesha Morhoon. We've talked about a couple of things, but I don't know that I'm at this stage I want to discuss them because we haven't had a chance to think them through carefully. And as any good academic, I don't want to say something without evidence first. but we're looking, broadly speaking, at this... I don't know that I would call it movement, but there's been a lot of discussion about the minimum wage recently, and specifically whether maybe possibly reducing or reducing the degree to which certain types of employees are dependent upon tipping. And so that's an area, broadly speaking, that we want to take a look at. I don't know that we have any strong theories yet that are supported by evidence that I can report to you, but it's an area that's getting more discussion and one I think is interesting and worth taking a look at.
Mike, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mike Palazzolo is a marketing professor at the University of California, Davis, co-researcher for the report, Frugality is Hard to Afford.